The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher. Listen to us on your iPhone, Android phones, BlackBerry, and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Are you ready, Steve? Andy?
Yeah!
Bert? Well, all right, fellas. Well, let's go!
You're listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader. Want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, 10th day of January, 2013. The Dow's up 20 points, the S&P is up 3, the comp is down 2, gold is up $21.50, crude is up 88 cents a barrel. Welcome to this show today. I've got on the screen in front of you, as I do most days, the S&P 500 E-mini futures. If you're unable to see my screens, if you're listening to the audio broadcast, just go to our homepage, CFRN.net. On the right-hand side, click the red, white, and blue button that says click here. Follow the instructions. You'll not only be able to see the charts, but you'll be able to participate in the discussion. You can type in questions, and we invite you to do that very thing. Now, this morning, we had a run-up to 1465. You'll notice the high of this hourly candle is exactly 1465. What's special about that number? We had a five-year high back on last Friday. Right there. That number was 1463. Well, the only thing special, really, about 1465 is that we sent that number out to our partners as a weekly trading zone, 65/66, before the market opened Monday morning. So you'll see our weekly trading zones on the chart here. For those of you that may be new, visiting us for the first time, we hit that, came right off of it. Now, we'll back up and we'll kind of walk through the week just real quick. Here's the Sunday night. Globex opened. We gapped up a little bit. Remember, we had that five-year high on Friday. This red candle here is the Globex open. We sold off right down through the weekly zone here. We had a tweet to sell it at 58 and a quarter. And then one to sell at 55, which took us down to the next zone, which is where we would anticipate support. We found support. The market rallied into resistance at 1458.59, weekly trading zone. Once it hits resistance, then the job is to go find some support. That's how the market works. For any of you that are new to trading, you're going to hear an awful lot about support and resistance. And that's what price does. It runs to resistance, and then it runs to support. And then it runs back to resistance, and then it runs back to support. Now, granted, those levels of support and resistance are constantly changing based upon the sentiment of whoever is at the table trading around the world at any given moment. So support was here at our weekly zone. Now again, these numbers go out to the partners before the market opens on Monday. Price ran up to resistance at 58.59. It came back down through our tweet at 54 to be short. Found support once again at 50.51. Attempted to rally, but here is where resistance shifted. Okay. There's two ways to argue this. Resistance shifted, or there simply wasn't enough buying energy to push it up to that earlier resistance level. Either way you want to slice it, price came down. It actually crashed through the weekly zone at 50.51. We had a tweet that said, consider being short at 54, and it said, consider adding at 48. So this move was good for a total of 8 points. Market found support here, not a weekly zone. It just found support there. That happens. Price began a pretty good advance, marched right back up through 50.51. And then when we saw this tail here, we said, hey, got to sell that 54 again. Now this time, it only dropped to 51.75. So it was good for 2.25 points on that move. Remember, this one was 8. This one was 2.25. Let's see that tail. Now, in the process of this thing getting turned around and heading back up, we create an ascending price channel. Bottom, top, bottom. See that? If you have any questions on this, feel free to type it in. All right, so we came down, touched the bottom of that channel yesterday, went back up to the weekly zone at 58/59, put in a nice little top there. And then yesterday, as we were wrapping up the radio program, price was right here. And we said, all week long, we've been selling 54. Okay? First we sold 58, then 55, and then we sold 54. Sold 54 again. Again. So what made it different this time? Well, what made it different this time is we put in a higher high. We got back up to the zone, and it the balance of power shifted. We're able to put a trend line in across the bottom, put a parallel line up here, creating the channel. When this came back to 54, remember, support once broken will often become resistance. Now, that's not anything particular to our style of trading. That's just very basic, sort of technical analysis 101. So, we broke through, we came back, and so this 54 happened to tie right in with the bottom of the price channel. And so, I had put this on the chart yesterday. For those of you who are here, you saw it. Will this be the bounce as mentioned? Okay. So, in other words, instead of selling 54, is it now time to buy 54? And turns out it was the time to buy 54. price ran back up to the zone here, consolidated for 6 hours, and then it made a break, and we had a tweet out to go long at, Michael, was it 1460 and a quarter?
I don't remember exactly where it was. I can go check for you.
No, I got it right here. Let's see. Yeah, 1460 and a quarter. So the tweet and the alert out to the partners was 60 and a quarter, and we ran up to 65. So that made for a nice trade. We hit 65 to the tick, came right back down to the weekly trading zone, and now we're going sideways into our second hour, okay, with price just consolidating right here at this 58-59 area. Now, we did have a tweet that said to be consider being short below 57. I went over that in the live trading room. We had a mechanical signal and a man-made signal, and we put the two together, and we're still waiting to see what's going to come of that. I mean, it immediately gave up a point once it was triggered, but now it's backed right into this zone for some consolidation. So we're gonna just wait and see what unfolds with this right here. If we jump out to the daily chart, here we go. We've talked about this now for a number of days. Going back to September, we had a top, October a top, had a bottom here in November, ascending price channel. Markets are fractal in nature. Just as we put an ascending price channel on that hourly chart I just showed you, here it is on the daily chart. We hit the top of the channel the first trading day of the new year. This big green candle here was New Year's Eve, closed New Year's Day. We reopen on Wednesday. We run up to the top of this price channel, and we've been walking it sideways for 6 trading days. Now, this is getting interesting. We spiked above this old high. See? And the high from back on Friday, we spiked above that even by a couple points. We haven't yet hit the top of the channel. So right now, this is still holding. But we could break that and continue to walk the top of the channel. We don't have an answer. All we know is that a 50% retracement would bring us back to 35 points, because this channel is 70 points in height from top to bottom. Okay, so a 50% retracement would bring the market down 35 points. We're trading up around 1460 right now, so that would knock us down to about 1425, I guess it would be. Okay, Michael, I'm going to go ahead and let you jump in and do the recap. I got a few headlines, and we'll kick them around and talk about them later in the show. Not a lot going on. You know, the Consumer Electronics Show is happening. And usually this is a week where we're all dazed and amazed by all the stuff coming out of Vegas and the Consumer Electronics Show. But this year, there's a few interesting things, but not too much. But we'll talk about a couple of the interesting things later in the show. But each day at this time, what Michael does is he takes the charts and he walks through all of the trade setups from the live trading room this morning. Now, the way we operate here at CFRN, we stream 24/7. We have live programming each day from 12 noon to 2 p.m. Eastern. This is the program we're in right now. But every morning from 9:30 to 11:30 Eastern, we have a live trading room where you come into a trading room just like this. We're putting on and taking off trades, showing you our setups, working with our indicators, teaching you to learn how to trade, basically is what we're doing. So we invite you to be a part of that, and Michael, as he gets rolling here, he'll tell you how you can take advantage of our free trial, how you apply, how you get going, how you get the platform downloaded, all of that good stuff. So stay tuned. Michael, it's all yours.
All right. Thank you, sir. I will pull the charts over. And here we go. going to start the recording now. All right, good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, January 10th, 2013. Let's go over the results to start with. Okay, in the live trading room this morning, we were plus 7 ticks on crude oil, plus 8 ticks on gold, and plus 7 ticks on the Russell. Now, we did... We slowed things down quite a bit in the live trading room this morning, at least for me anyway. We slowed things down quite a bit. We did look at quite a few markets still, but we were, you know, we were just slow about it all. The same trade setups, obviously, across all the markets, same time frames for the most part, across every single market. The same indicators, same everything, as it is every day. Okay? We ended the day, I think we only took 4 trades this morning, and we... You know, 3 of those were wins, and one of them was a break-even. I know that's slower than it normally is, but that's what we did. We had some special guests in the live trading room this morning that were invited for the day today, just to check things out. And they get to see it happen live, real time. All right, if you have not taken a free trial with us, go to www.cf.rnlikenancy.net/apply. Sign up for the free trial. All we ask for is your name and your email address. In the free trial, you get access to everything you see here. You get access to our live trading room for 5 business days. You get access to our indicators for 5 business days. You get access to the charting platform. You get access to Dwayne and I. You know, all the stuff that you would normally get except the partners' meetings. You do not get to go into the partners' meetings, which leads me right into the partners' meeting. There is a partners' meeting tonight, okay? There is a partners' meeting tonight, all right? So if you are a partner, it's at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, as it always is, every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you are not a partner and you want to get into that partners meeting, you need to give me a call. You should have my email and my phone number. Either give me a call or email me. You can email me at support@cfrn.net. And pretty much everybody's got my phone number by now, I think. If you have any questions about anything we've done, anything, you know, anything you're thinking of doing, just give us a call and be happy to work through things with you as much as we can. All right, now let's get on to the trades. Okay, I did not take a ton of trades today. I tried to keep it slow because I know that sometimes I start moving really fast when there's a lot of opportunity, and it's just too fast for some folks. Okay, the way that things started off this morning, there was a downward move here. You see we had a bearish cross. Now, I'll show you the trade setup. Let me start off by showing you the trade setup. There was no support down here on the slingshot for this first move down, so there was no trade there. There was no trade over here. Well, actually, right here, right at the open, you could have gotten long right there for about 4 or 6 ticks. But let's just go through the actual setup, okay? I have a picture of it right over here. This is what it looks like on the short side, because I'm going to show you the short side right now. You look for a bearish cross of the MA1 down below the BBC. That's step one. Step two is you look for some space between the BBC and the MA1. That's step two. Step three is you look for a pullback to the BBC, which is the green line, and a down close, or a close in the direction of the cross. In this case, a down close. Step four, look for divergence, and you enter on the down close. Every trade has an 8-tick stop, no matter what market it is. Every trade has an 8-tick stop. Okay? Now, I'll put that back here and just minimize it. Now, the assumption is that you're going to have enough break-in momentum for it to pull all the way back to the BBC. If it does not pull all the way back to the BBC, or if you have divergence but the slingshot is the opposite color, the cycle portion of the slingshot is the opposite color, then you need some confirmation of the continuation of the trend. I know that sounds like a lot, but this is going to be a podcast, so you can just rewind it and listen to it again. You need confirmation of the continuation of the trend. We do that by drawing these little trend lines in here, okay? We do that by drawing these little trend lines in here. And if it doesn't pull all the way back to the BBC, or if the slingshot's not in favor of the trade, then you can draw a trend line and just look for a close down below that trend line. Once you have the bearish cross, it's pulling back, but say the sellers aren't here at the BBC where they usually are. Say they're a little lower. They're right here. You don't go all the way back to the BBC. You wait for the close below the trend line, you enter in there. Okay, here's a couple examples of it right here. Pull back, close below the trend line. Now over here, it pulled all the way back up to the BBC, which is in the picture. Okay, all the way back up to the BBC. The problem is that there was blue in the cycle over here. Okay, so you have to wait for the confirmation. That would be the close down below that trend line. I draw these trend lines in manually myself, all right, as the market's moving. The close below the trend line. That's where I entered this morning, and I put a profit target right down here at the low, and I got filled right down there at the low. Okay? That was it. That was a perfect example of how to take the trade, how to put a target on the trade, what to expect out of the trade. It was everything that I was looking to show today in the live trading room. That was crude oil. Was that the first one that I showed? The Russell was the first one that I showed. But that was crude oil. If you were just looking for 2 points on the day, right there, you're pretty close to 2 points. By the time I had gotten to this trade right here, I was already up 7 ticks in the Russell. So I was up at this point. If you're looking for the equivalent of 2 points per day per contract, we were up just about 3 right here. We're up about $140 a contract. Okay. All right. So as we move through, there was no trading right in here when it got flat. All right. There was an opportunity over here to short. I missed it. Nothing in here. Well, yeah, I guess you could have shorted right there. I missed all this. Everything right in here, I missed all this, and I didn't take any more trades on crude oil. All right, that was it. There were a couple other opportunities in here where you could have taken trades, but I did not take any. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to move the crude over, and I'll show you the Russell. All right. Now, this was the first trade that I took. If you were looking for just 2 points per day, then by 9:41, you could have been done. All right, on this particular trade right here, again, going back to my picture, my screenshot, okay, the short side, let's see, well, I'll put it way over here, okay, the short side. You're looking for the bearish cross, like this, step one. The space in between, step two, the pullback, and down close, step three, with the bearish divergence, step four. All right? Right here, we had the cross, the pullback, the space, the down close, and the divergence. So right here was a perfect opportunity to execute exactly as the picture shows. All right? And you can see what it did. It gave nice profit. All right? There's a couple things wrong with this from my perspective. One is it was all pre-market, and two, it was going right into the weekly trading zone. So I wanted to wait until we got through the zone before I actually traded myself. All right. As we dropped through the zone, this was another one of those scenarios where it didn't have enough momentum. I mean, it had so much momentum that it didn't pull it all the way back to the BBC. You had to wait for a continuation down below the trend line. That was right in here. Now, on this one, there was no room to run down here. There was no divergence. So it wasn't the best opportunity. It worked out just fine. You would have been looking to short right here, but you had no room to run down here, so it was tough to gauge where the thing was going to go. All right. The next one over here, I actually took this one because we did have some divergence down here. All right. I had to draw the trend line in again. We closed below the trend line. Once it started to move in my favor, I put my stop at break even. It came back and took me out at break even. Now, the trade right after that was this one right here. You can see we had the divergence here, and we had the close down below the trend line again with the divergence. I shorted that trade over here, and I took profit down here. That, again, what I was illustrating was if you look for this right here, this green portion of the slingshot to work its way down into the cycle, you can get an idea of the range of the trade. Now, when I was in this trade, I was up here, and we had this space right here to the prior swing. We had this much space. And we had this much space, like twice as much space down here for the green line to work its way down into the cycle. So I said to everyone in the room at the time, I anticipate that we're going to work our way down into the cycle with the green line, and that will put us below the prior swing. right? And that's what it did. So I took profit over there, and that was the end of my trading on the Russell for the morning. Not to say that there weren't more trades, because there were, you know, there were many more trades. There's one right here, there's one right here, there's one right here. But that was the end of my trading in the live trading room on the Russell. Okay. I'll just jump over to the next market, which happens to be gold. I'm working my way back across today, the way that I normally try to. All right, now on gold, I think I only took one trade on gold as well, right? Yeah, I was using this as an example in here of what to expect. I said if you entered, and we'll go back to that picture again, same picture, same thing, over and over and over again. You see how it doesn't matter what market this picture is on? You guys don't even know what market this picture is on, do you? See, it doesn't even matter. If I didn't have any prices over here at all, the setup is the same. It doesn't matter what market it is. It's the same indicators. You got your bearish cross at step one. Beneath here. You have space right there. Oops, space in here. That's step two. You have a pullback and down close. That's step three. And you have divergence, step four. So your entry is right here on this down close. And with this much space right here, you anticipate that it's going to get through the prior swing pivot. Okay? So right there, down to the cycle portion of the slingshot. Now it starts up here, the green line works its way down to the cycle portion of the slingshot, and that right there is where it turns around and moves up. Okay? So the entry would have been here, your exit could have been down here anywhere. I missed the trade, I was explaining it, but I didn't take it. I don't know why I didn't take it, but I didn't. But I believe I did explain it. I may have explained it after the fact. But that was the trade setup. Now in here, this is one of the ones that didn't pull all the way back down to the BBC, but you got an up close above the trend line. So right in here was a spot to get long. Another one was right in here. This one actually did pull all the way back to the BBC. But it was red on the cycle, so you needed the close above the trend line, the confirmation. And that worked out well. This is the one that I actually took here. It pulled back down to the BBC. You needed the close up above the trend line to get long. I got long in here. I believe I probably got long right over here on that close. And up it went until the green line reached the cycle. Okay. And I took profit up there. That was my trade on the gold this morning. I didn't trade any more on the gold, but there were more trades to be taken. Okay. Right in here, you could have shorted. Let's see, right here, there was no divergence to support the trade. Over here, there was nothing on the long side. Let's see, we're at the end of the morning session right here, but there was a trade right here on the long side you could have taken. Right here would have been the entry. This bar, right there. Oops, move that over a little. This bar, right there, would have been your entry. Okay. The way things look right now, it's about to set up some bearish divergence, but it's not there yet. A pullback to the BBC, you would need a close below the trend line because you don't have divergence to support the trade. You also don't have divergence to gauge any range on the trade. So I would let that go. I'll point out just one more thing in here. Now, this was the pullback down here, okay? Now, while you're waiting... Oops. Sorry. That was the pullback. Until it hits the BBC, that's when you stop drawing your trend line. Okay? When it hits the BBC is when you stop moving your trend line. As long as it's not hitting the BBC yet, until you get an up close above this trend line, like if you get wicks above it, you have to redraw the trend line. Right, if you get a wick above it. An example of that would be right over here, right now. Well, not right now, but a few minutes ago. Right in here. That would have been the original trend line. All right. Actually, that's not a good example of it because it's not a wick, it's an actual up close. Anyway. Right over here, your entry would have been right in here. You would have been looking to get long. Over here, you didn't have any divergence to support the up close, so you wouldn't have done anything right in there. Right here where it currently is, this is your trend line. You don't have any divergence to support any trading in there at the moment. Okay? And that was gold. Now, I didn't take any trades on these markets this morning. I did point one thing out. Right in here on the down close, there was an entry on the ES. Same stuff. Yeah, you down. You cross down your space right in here. You pull back, tested the BBC in a down close. Now, if you entered right here on the down close, exactly at the down close at 61.5, and you had an 8-tick stop on it, you probably would have stopped out right here at 63.5. Had you not entered exactly at the low, had you entered one tick above it, then you would have been in it for the, you know, for the ride down to the weekly trading zone. This red box down here, I had actually drawn that red box over here originally, and then it pulled up, and I said, well, I still think it's going to get into that red box. And you can see that it eventually did get into the red box. Now you can see it's just choppy right in here at the weekly trading zone. All right, that was the one thing that we looked at on the ES this morning. Let's see, we really didn't look at the YM. Okay? We really didn't look all that much at the YM. There was one other thing on the ES. Let me point that out. We had a pierce of the envelope over here suggesting a 5 to 6 point move down. That one only went 4. We had another one over here suggesting a 5 to 6 point move up. That one went 6. Another one over here suggesting a 5 to 6 point move down. That one went 4. Another one over here suggesting a 5 to 6 point move up. That one went more than 6. And another one over here suggesting a 5 to 6 point move down. That one went 6. All right. That was all on the DMT in the last couple days on the ES. Natural gas. Natural gas came out today at 10:30 my time. We were looking for opportunities in here after the natural gas came out. We should have been looking for it before. There were some nice opportunities right in here before the natural gas came out. Then it came out. You see it popped up, went sideways. All of this is 1 minute from right here to right here. All that is 1 minute. And then it started to drop down a few minutes later, and we missed a couple of trades in here. We were going to start right in here. We were seriously looking for a trading opportunity when it got over here. And by the time it happened, by the time we got the down close over here below this trend line, we had the black line above the green line. So there was no opportunity to trade right there on the short side. As it panned out, it went up, and there were, you know, there was an opportunity here to get long and right here to get long. Just looking at the trend lines, right there and there were opportunities to get long, and no divergence to support any trades in there. If you look at it right now, there's no divergence to support any trades on the short side, but I would look for a trade. It's going to give us some divergence here if it starts to pull up to the BBC. Okay? That was the live trading room this morning. Now, does anybody have any questions about any of this stuff? We had a pretty good showing this morning. Jerry, for the long trade, you need to see divergence with the blue slingshot. And for the short trade, you need to see divergence with the red slingshot. For the bounce off the BBC, yes. For the bounce off the BBC. If you're doing the continuation, then it may not be red or blue, as you mentioned. It may be the opposite color. But you need to have space in between the green line. I'll show you right here on the NQ. Did I cover the NQ? I don't think I did. Anyway, we didn't trade the NQ this morning, but there were opportunities on the NQ. Let's see. What you were saying, Jerry, was this right here. You had a bullish cross, tested the BBC with an up close, and it's blue. That is true. Over here, we had a bearish cross. We didn't test the BBC, but we had a continuation on the way down, and it was red. There was no divergence either. That was true. But let's see if I can show you an example somewhere in here that happened this morning. Right in here. Okay. It pulled back up toward the BBC, but it didn't have enough. Well, it had too much momentum to pull back into the BBC. And we had some divergence. It was space in between the green line and the cycle. The cycle was blue. So you need the close down below the trend line to confirm it. The close down below the trend line was right here. At 24.75, it pulled all the way back to 26.25 before it went all the way down here. Okay? So, if you don't have the proper color cycle down here, then you're not going to take only the bounce off the BBC. Okay? You're going to look for confirmation of the close below the trend line. All right? The question is about the YBR. Does it work only for the ES? Can it be used for other time frames? It can be used for other time frames, particularly the 4-tick range crude oil. Okay? take a look at that. Let's see, any other questions? No, just comments. All right. Well, with that, guys, I'm going to wrap it up. I guess I didn't go through all this stuff here on the NQ, but it's all the same thing. You know, you're looking for your pullback, test of the BBC, your down close. If you have blue down here, then you need to close below the trend line. Same thing over and 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 over again. Okay? All the markets, all the time, all the same. Simple as that. All right. Okay. Okay. Anybody that's got my layout from this week, there is one chart. I don't remember which one it is, but it's got a thing called CFTL on it. This CFTL. All right. And that is going to throw trend lines all over your chart like that. If you go to view, all active indicators, just remove that thing. Okay. Just remove it. If you happen to have a chart that's got my trend lines all over it, and you know, you're scrolling back and you want to see something way back here and you see all these trend lines, just click on this thing right here. It says select all. That'll highlight all the drawing objects. And then click on the black X. That'll remove all the drawing objects. Okay? I'm not going to do it right now because I don't want to remove all my drawing objects. But just do that. Click on this, it says select all, and click on this black thing right here. It says remove it. And it'll take all the drawing objects off. Okay? No. It won't return them. Once you do that, they're gone. Okay? If you select them all, there might be something to copy them. But I don't know. I don't know if they're all selected right now. If you do Control C and copy, it says copy selected drawing objects to the clipboard. That might work. I don't know. You'd have to try that out. Okay. Personally, I do not know.
Okay, that it?
I'm reading. There's a couple more questions. Just an observation. If you take a trade with a steep angle of the BBC line, will you have a better result? Not necessarily. It depends. You know, the market, a lot of times it's going to be steep right up until it's not steep. You know, and you don't know where that end is going to be. You have a pretty good idea based on what the slingshot is telling you, the distance between here and here. You know, if you have this to this and you're up here and the green line is already all the way up in the cycle and you're up here, you know, the next pullback down may not go all the way up above that. You know, you may not get any farther. That's topping action. When the cycle starts headed down like that, that's topping action. And you may be all done. But you see, you still got a steep line right here. But it may be all done. All right. So the thing to look for is this and this. If they're all going in the same direction, like over here and here, then that's when you might see more movement on it, okay? There. Now I'm all done. I'll stop the recording on that. Okay, the recording is stopped. I just wanted to make sure I answered all the questions. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
That is it.
We're all done. Okay, guys, we have a partners meeting tonight. Every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you're a partner, please be there. And if you have specific topics that you want covered, feel free to email those ahead of time to support@cfrn.net. That way we can make sure we get that worked into tonight's discussion and that we have the answer for you. Maybe you need a chart. Maybe you need whatever it is you need. Let us know, and we'll try to be prepared for that. If you're a partner, your invitation, you got an invitation Sunday night or Monday morning with your email with the weekly trading zones, so the link is there. You'll get an additional email this afternoon about 5 p.m. Eastern, give or take, that has the link for tonight's meeting. As Michael mentioned, for those of you who are on a free trial and you want to become a partner, you want to be in that partners meeting tonight, then you should have received an email. It should be in your inbox from Michael There's a special offer right now if you want to become a partner. If you don't have that email or you would like that email, then send an email to support@cfrn.net, and in the subject line, put, send me that email, okay? Don't know how to make it any easier than that. We're going to go now to our friends, Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com and Ms. Robin Dane, the trading coach out in Las Vegas, Nevada. Before we do that, I want to just mention iTunes. Some of you may have heard of it. It's now bigger. iTunes is bigger than Apple was in 2004. Now, that's a true story. iTunes, the little music store, okay, this is, iTunes was, people didn't know if this whole downloadable music thing was even going to, you know, work out. There was an early company called MP3.com, it was part of the dot-com bust. They were one of the first ones to the table. They didn't survive. iTunes, coming up on its 10-year anniversary in April, and this year they're going to do about $12 billion. Analyst Horace Desdoux of Asemco has crunched the numbers on the iTunes store, which includes the original music service and the App Store and the iBook Store. So those all fall under, you know, one label, the iTunes Store. You got music, you got apps, you got books. You got TV, you got movies. Now, he concludes it's a $12 billion a year business for Apple and the app developers, the music labels, the TV, and movie studios who sell through it. Now, why did Horace have to go to so much trouble to come up with that number? I mean, shouldn't that just be a publicly disclosed number for a publicly traded company? Well, you would think. But there's a little bit of mystery here. Okay, Horace has figured out that the iTunes store will make $12 billion this year, gross revenue. Now, in 2004, Apple, the entire company, stem to stern, had only $8 billion in revenue. The interesting part of this story is that Apple has always, since the beginning, downplayed the iTunes store, saying that it runs a bit above break-even. It's kind of like that rich uncle of yours who, you know, he's always afraid you're going to hit him up for a loan. So whenever you say, hey, how you doing, man? And you're like, well, man, you know, I'm just getting by. Just getting by. Just trying to keep my head above water. Yeah, kind of like that. So Apple has always done that. They've always said the iTunes store is just a little bit above break-even. Even in its formal accounting, Apple only includes the 30% cut that it takes out of the sales, not the full price consumers pay, as revenue, and then they bury the number under a category of other music-related products and services. They put it in the category with iPod cables and speakers. $12 billion a year. And they, why do they do that? We don't know. But some of us wonder. It's hard to separate the success of the iTunes store from the iPod and iPhone businesses. An easy, legal way to download music is a crucial part of the experience of owning an Apple gadget, and a library of iTunes content makes sticking with Apple the path of least resistance. Being able to get that one song for 99 cents, that was such a game changer. You know, in the past, you had to buy the whole album or the CD or the cassette tape. Now, Desdoux concludes that music and other media sales are a far larger portion of iTunes sales than apps. You might think the apps were the big thing, but it's music, movies, and TV. Apple co-founder Steve Jobs once bragged in an interview with Time Magazine that Apple had invested tens of millions of dollars in building the iTunes store. Now, many in the tech world poke fun at the iTunes store because they say it just doesn't work very well. Well, I have to say, it made $12 billion. They're downplaying that revenue, and they're hiding it with cables and speakers. It's also been a good career move for Eddie Q. He's the executive at Apple who launched the iTunes Store. While other Apple executives stumbled in launching their online services, he has now taken over their portfolios, most recently Apple Maps and Siri from the departed Scott Forstall. So the next time you go to download a song or a podcast, maybe our podcast, if you go to the iTunes Store and if you search Dwayne, that's me, Dwayne, D-E-W-A-Y-N-E, if you search that name, pops right to the top. CFRN Podcast, we've been in the iTunes Store now for 6 years, and you can always catch the most recent episode, except for today's like today when I'm running a day behind, so today's Thursday, you can catch Tuesday's episode in the iTunes Store, and this afternoon I'll make sure Wednesday's episode gets uploaded along with today, Thursday, and then we'll be all caught up. So think about it, the next time you buy that 99-cent song, you're pitching in to help Apple rake in $12 billion this year, not from their hardware, but from digital music. We're going to pause for a brief station identification. We'll be right back with David Williams from PageTrader.com and Miss Robin Dane, the trading coach.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, Dwayne.
David, good morning. Welcome to the show. Robin, good morning.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Dwayne. Good morning, David and Michael.
Good.
It's a great day in Las Vegas.
You bet it is. Robin, are you going to the Consumer Electronics Show this week?
I have my tech person scouting the place out. No, I am not going, unfortunately. She was not able to get me a badge because it's not open to the public. But I will be on that list next year, but she's scouting it out for me.
Very good. Chinese manufacturer TCL unveiled a TV at the show and a new set-top box that will be available later this year in the U.S., which uses the Google TV platform. Now, you think you're watching the TV, but this TV is actually watching you. The new TV, developed with Marvel Technology Group, uses sensors and voice recognition to determine who is viewing the television at any given time. It can then offer streamed or live programs, which the brain feels will appeal to any individual or the family as a group. A little Orwellian. You and the family sit down to watch some TV, and everybody's a little tired. Nobody wants to have to pick anything. So you just turn the TV on, and the TV scans the room to see who's there. Now, let's say it's you, the wife, and your son. The daughter's at ballet. So it's going to scan the room, see who's there. It may recommend a family movie that has to do with baseball because it realizes the little girl's not there tonight. Think about it. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. This is the first year out of the gate for this thing. You just got to know wherever you are, somebody's watching you, even in your own living room. So, David, I hope you'll get one of these TVs soon and let me know how you like it.
I won't need one of those because my TV set box has a camera in it that's watching me already.
I remember that discussion we had years ago. Yeah, we did. I sure did. Well, see, now they're not trying to hide it. They're just coming right out and telling you.
That's right. Now that's the thing you have to be worried about, is not the one they're trying to hide. The one you have to be worried about is the one they're coming right out in the open with. But no, you know, any technology that allows new things to be done will be done. That's the thing. There's no such thing as them being able to do something and not doing it. The being able to is equal to the doing. And so whatever technological advances there are will be done. And it just continues on that way. One of the ones that I'm curious about that we've not seen, and I'm not sure why we haven't seen it, but it has bothered me for many, many years that when an airline has the unfortunate crash and people are killed that are traveling commercially, that the FAA has to go in through the black box, which is itself a very high-tech piece of equipment. They have to locate it. It can withstand all the forces of a crash. And then they try to figure out what went wrong, because the black box is recording all of the vitals of the airplane. And they can kind of ascertain, sort of reverse engineer, what took place that went wrong. But what we don't have on airplanes, strangely enough, are cameras. Doesn't it strike you as a little odd that we have cameras in the 7-Eleven and we have them in every other place, but where it would do us the most good in an airline crash so we could understand what really took place, we don't have cameras.
You know, that's always really true. That's really true.
Yeah. What is that?
I don't know.
Is there...
Probably they try to cut costs so much on those planes, like cutting everything out, making those seats smaller, making it crunching everybody in.
Yeah, the 7-Eleven guy can afford a camera.
Yeah, you would think.
So. I can't believe it has anything to do with affordability. It has to. There has to be some other. And I don't. They're
you
filming
think it's
you.
A privacy issue?
It's not really, because
where's your privacy in when you're walking on the street and you're walking by cameras and when you're in May Company and you're on camera.
That's true.
When you're in the mall and you're on camera. Why? No, privacy is not it.
Yeah, when you walk through the airport, you're being filmed and scanned and matched against profiles.
And you're being searched. So what privacy do you have? Seriously.
This can't be privacy.
Well, the last time I was on an airplane, they searched me, they patted me down, checked me for stuff. I got on the airplane, and then they handed me they served dinner and they handed me a fork and a knife. What's this?
It's called first class.
No, but I mean, they wouldn't let me on the plane with that, but they're delivering them to me as I'm eating.
Yeah.
You had an honest look about you.
I did. I think I might have been the only one in there that they gave the fork and knife to.
They have that new whiz bang one that you stand and put your hands up in the air and the thing zips around you and scans you and then comes out. It's quite amazing.
Oh. Well, anyway,
I get to go through the fast line because I have so much mileage.
Oh, well, that's.
So I don't even have to take my computer out of my thing or my shoes off.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah, so technology it's amazing, and we'll have TVs that read you and know who's watching and all that.
I have looked at that, and I know this is a sore topic for Dwayne, so, you know,
What?
They had the Pebble
CES,
and the Pebble was the one that was on Kickstarter. They ended up having to go to China and building it there because they had so many orders for it, 85,000 orders for Pebbles. And that's the watch that you can customize, your perfect watch. It's easy downloading as an app. You customize everything for what you want, and it's, you know, it's totally integrated. And you can check it out on Get Pebble, and that's a new one. And that's kind of hot. I think that's going to be hot. I mean, it is hot already, and it hasn't even done it. I mean, it's been trying to get out there forever, but it's a live video stream from SEC if you go onto the website.
Well,
MCCES, that's my dyslexia.
People are a little ticked off about the delay in the Pebble.
Yeah, there's been quite a delay.
Yep. In fact, see, the last news article, they still haven't shipped them, right?
No, they still have not shipped them. No, you have to pre-order them.
And they were supposed to.
It's pretty amazing, though, when you think about it, though, still in general, it's pretty amazing that all these orders are in the pipeline. What a great problem to have, you know, before you even put it out there. I mean, it's, and they probably did a lot of more due diligence to get it, you know, working exactly the way it's like one of the first integrated, not first, you know, doesn't Amazon have something for the eyes? Somebody has some kind of thing that you put over your eyes.
Well, Google's coming out with
Google
glasses,
yeah.
But they're not actually available yet.
Yeah, so everything's going to get integrated. I mean, you're going to be able to, you know, just put on your sunglasses and see your internet and talk your way through the phone call. And, you know, you're not going to need phones and all this other stuff that we have to carry around right now and chargers. Charger thing really, really ticks me off. That's like one of my rants for today is having to charge the phone continuously. And of course, when you need it, it's never charged. And when you need to charge it, you never have a charger around. So, it's kind of like your Volt. No, just kidding.
Oh,
I know you charge your Volt all the time.
As often as I can. I try to keep that thing fully charged so I can zip around town without having to purchase any more gasoline.
I'm still waiting for a ride.
Well, next time I see you, you can have a ride.
Okay.
How's that?
Okay.
The last time that I was at CES, it was many years ago, and it's been more than a decade. I stopped going many, many years ago. But it's not because I don't like it, but it's just that for whatever reason, I just haven't been there. But when I first came to Las Vegas, myself and Marta, the mother of my daughter, went to CES. This was back in 1980. And we went into a booth where there was a long line of people, and we waited because they were going to demonstrate the world's first audio CD.
Wow.
And you would listen to Stravinsky coming out of a speaker with no scratch of the record, no nothing, just pure digital music.
Yeah.
And now they don't make CDs anymore. They've stopped.
Yep.
And so isn't it funny that, you know, and that is 30 years is a lot of time in the technological world.
Have they stopped making them?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that.
I believe they have. I believe they have.
Okay.
There may be some thin streams of them still coming out, but the majority of all CDs are out of production from what I understand.
Interesting.
So, yeah. So it's kind of funny, you know, we're talking about CES, and that's my last real big memory was coming out here and seeing and listening, and now here we are, the
here
ending of the CD and the new.
Isn't that something?
You know, yeah. So
I remember I was working on Wall Street, and I was taking the train home, and it was the first Sony tape, portable, that you could carry and put your earphones into, and I found myself singing on the train, and then all of a sudden people looking at me and not realizing it. That's the last technological hurdle. I still have that one too, and it still works, but I can't get any tapes for it. But it's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing the technology and the size of it and how small it got and how fast. I mean, it really is incredibly fast in our generation, what we've seen. We've gone into hyperdrive on technology development and, you know, some of these leaps that especially Apple has put into the business. I mean, just has quantum leaped us.
Yeah.
Where would we be if those things didn't occur? You know, that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. Where would we be?
Well, here's an interesting thought, though. If 100 years went by and we all were able to come back 100 years from now, it would be virtually unrecognizable how things are happening and how people communicate and how 200 years would be unrecognizable to the first 100 and so on. It would just be in a completely different form. So the question is will we still be here? Because along with those technological advances, it seems like society degrades at the same rate that technology is increasing.
Yeah, so you're absolutely correct on that one.
You know, so obviously the greater technology is going to be used for worser. Worse, is that a word? Worser.
Worser.
Worse,
we'll
worse and worse. Yeah. Reasons.
Yeah, isn't that
and,
the truth?
You know, humanity, you know, the funny thing is that the majority of humanity wants to live serenely. They don't want to be, you know, in trouble with their neighbors and so on. But there's enough of humanity that lives their life to want to hurt and be in war and take over and rule and so on, so that that dictates the character of the world sometimes, you know. And it's those people. Yeah, it's just it's the nature of man, you know. So,
well, I'm glad I'm in the generation where, you know, our age group was like caught between the old stuff so we know it and caught between the new stuff that's coming in the hyperdrive. And so at least we have a feel for both. I can't believe that I am saying stuff that my mom said when she first started. She had a job at General Foods, and they were training her on the computer. She says, oh, I don't really think I want to learn the computer. It's too complicated, and I don't think I want to do that. And I was like, oh, my, come on. You got to be in with what's going on. You know, I was like, and now I'm finding myself, I don't want to do Twitter. I don't want to do LinkedIn. I don't want to do all these things. I said, oh, my gosh, am I acting like my mom, or is it like you say, does it remove something morally within you? I mean, I don't like everybody, you know, watching my business and watching and putting every, you know, I go to the supermarket and I got to tweet it or I got to, you know, Facebook it. It just, I think our generation is in, a lot of people are in denial and really don't like it.
I think Facebook proved, though, that I don't think Facebook knew, I really don't, that the pent-up demand for people to mark their world in cyberspace, to say, this is, here's my domain, here is my life, here I want something to outlast me, and here's a page that can show what happened in my life to everybody. Everyone can now know. I don't think anybody could have known the enormous pent-up demand, perhaps, that was there. And that demand and the ability to communicate your pictures and your life to other people keeps growing, and so the technology of watching people and all this stuff will be much more widely accepted than it used to be, because it all kind of fits in. I mean, everything you do will be literally Facebookable and so on, and it seems like people want more and more of their lives on in the digital medium. And so to do that, I think you're going to find, I mean, we already have, I don't know if you're aware of this, but there apparently is going to be drones in America, excuse my voice, flying around for security purposes, supposedly, but that'll also allow them to monitor individuals the same way that they can monitor an individual without you ever knowing and so on.
Yeah. In fact, we have somebody at the CES for Red Rock looking for a drone, because when we go to look for somebody and we can't get into certain places, you know, the drone would help us in dangerous areas where we just can't get into. And so we're actually looking at drones for search and rescue. But you're right, it just crosses over the line.
You're right, it crosses over the line. I think I was at a Brookstone or some store like that out here, and they had a little flying helicopter that had a camera on it. You could fly this helicopter around and have the camera would show on your iPhone.
Yep,
so you had a little app on your iPhone, and you could see wherever the – I mean, there is your – that's a toy drone right there.
Yeah.
You can go buy that and, you know – drone in on people with a little helicopter.
My son got that helicopter for Christmas, and the initial flight lasted 5 seconds, and we haven't been able to get off the ground since. Yeah, it crashed and true story.
All right. Well, there you are. You know, I do have, just want to mention before we get to the markets, I do have now two friends that have moved out of the United States of America.
Really?
Yep, they've moved away from the United States because of many of these types of issues and also where they think the United States is going and so on. And they've selected, one of them is in Cabo San Lucas, and one of them is in, I can't think of, there's another one sort of
Belize.
South of the border. Belize, something like that.
Belize is a hot spot.
Yeah. So anyway, you know, people are concerned about this. It bothers a lot of people that this kind of technology allows. But to have the technology is to use the technology. They will Every new advance that comes out will be used. They won't be holding it back. It all gets end up being used. I mean, I remember just 5 or 6 years ago, you could buy in a catalog at Sharper Image something that you hook under the underside of somebody's car, and it bounces a signal off the pavement up to a satellite and tells you where their car is. And you could buy that right at Sharper Image. So, really? You could monitor to them in real time where they were driving.
Yeah.
And that was 5 years ago.
It's scary. There's no doubt it's scary. It's, you know, I
it's all going to become very normal, though.
I miss the old stuff. I really miss the old simpleness of.
You want to go to the first place where what's his name landed when he was in Back to the Future, when his car landed before Hilldale Valley was built.
I mean, that's how it was in New Hampshire. I mean, New Hampshire wasn't. I mean, it's funny because New Hampshire was so close to the tech. You know, the tech freeway with all the high-tech companies that were there, Digital and Wang, and all the people that started high-tech, you know, the Silicon Valley of the East Coast. And that certainly has changed a great deal. I mean, most of those companies are not even in business. I mean, for Digital to not even be in business was just amazing to me. You know, the, such a large company and so vast in what we built and to have it be out of business, you know, it just, it's mind-blowing. And New Hampshire being so close to that area, even though a lot of people worked there and we certainly had facilities in New Hampshire, was one of the largest employers was DEC, but it really kept the simpleness of the town, you know, it just really kept just the simple kind of life kind of thing. Although I went back and I was amazed at how it changed. So it has changed. But it hasn't changed as quickly, I don't think, as it has out here or some other places.
Yeah. Well, you'll still be able to have a white picket fence. It'll just be a hologram.
Yeah.
So don't worry.
An illusion.
Right. You can change the color of it and all
wouldn't
that.
Wouldn't that be cool if you could, you know, I mean, we went crazy putting up all the Christmas lights. I'm going crazy now taking them all down. Wouldn't it be crazy to create a hologram that just puts it up on your house?
That's the thing about technology. It can you can always say, well, there's a lot of good we can do with this, but along with it comes with all the other side, too. So that's why people have to be reasonable, and that's why there has to be some common sense in our laws, because you can't legislate everything. People have to have common sense. There needs to be a law against not having common sense. That's what there needs to be a law
that's
about.
That's true. That's
if we had that law, then we wouldn't have to have all the other laws, because everybody has common sense, but they choose to either over... Not everybody. I have to take that back. I can't say that everybody has common sense. But, you know, common sense, they call it common because it used to be common, and it's getting a lot less common than it used to be. Uncommon sense. All right.
So we should probably get to the markets, huh?
We should, because there's important things that have happened.
Yeah,
and,
I mean, I want to I don't know if we want to talk about this Herbalife, but I'd kind of like to talk about that.
Well, what do you want to say? Let's hear what you got.
Well, you know, it was interesting because I'm, you know, working with some people, and they were in the trade yesterday, and they got snafu'd because they were in the wrong direction. They were in a long. And then the SEC announcement came out, and they lost a ton. I mean, literally, a huge amount of money. And,
what did the SEC announce?
Excuse me?
What did the SEC announce yesterday?
That it was a pyramid scheme, and that, you know, more of their – there was some kind of they think insider trading with one fund, and – couldn't understand why it moved so drastically in one direction yesterday. Now you could put up the chart from yesterday, and then then had the big move. So then the SEC announced it was going in an up direction, and then the SEC announced that they were going to do an investigation, and then it took a nosedive, and then this morning it had another big move up, and then came down again after the CEO got on to CNBC and announced that they are not that they didn't do anything wrong, that they are not a pyramid scheme.
What is their symbol? Do you know? I'm sorry. Do you know the symbol for that?
HLF, H Harry Larry Frank, And they said they determine a pyramid scheme by the criteria that more money comes from them signing up people than selling the product. That's what they consider a pyramid scheme. If you get more from, you know, selling new customers to come in to the into the pyramid versus selling products.
I think they've changed the definition, the well, legal definition of yes. pyramid scheme over a number of years. I believe that that used to be different, but I'm not 100% sure. But go ahead. It's interesting.
Yeah, so that's what they're dealing with now. So it is. It had a big spike up this morning, which, you know, based on, you know, the pre-announcement of the CEO doing his thing, and then is taken a nosedive ever since.
Okay. So now this has been going on for a couple weeks. This yeah. started back in the end of December when.
But Herbalife has been around forever, though.
Oh, they've yeah. been around forever. But what happened is a couple weeks ago, Robert Ackman.
There you go, Ackman. Yeah.
He did a 3 or 4 hour presentation in New York City, revealing this massive short position that he had in Herbalife. And this
yes,
multimedia presentation,
yes.
it actually did go about 3 hours, I think. And he explained why, in his opinion, Herbalife is a pyramid scheme. And he said that he will see the price go to zero. If need be, he will testify before Congress. And he went on and on and on.
And who is he, Ty? Who is he in all this?
He's a big hedge fund guy. Robert
yeah.
Ackman.
Okay. Okay.
He has been a buy side only kind of guy. Bill Ackman, that's his name. In fact, let me just give you, this is the headline I read yesterday or the story, but I've been talking about it for a couple weeks here on the show. A hedge fund war is breaking out between two of the richest and most famous hedge fund managers in the world. The battlefield is Herbalife, the distributor of nutritional products, which yesterday when I talked about it, I said it was probably the first association any of us had with multi-level marketing or network marketing. It was one of the originals right up there with
right.
Amway. Now, hedge funder Bill Ackman is famously short Herbalife since his presentation in December, likening it to an illegal pyramid scheme. Today, which would have been yesterday, hedge fund titan Dan Loeb has gone long Herbalife. He has taken a massive 8.2% stake, which equates to, I think, roughly 9 million shares. Now, the stock spiked on the news that Dan Loeb was going long. Ackman first announced his short with a dizzying multi-hour presentation that he delivered near the end of December. The premise of his short was that the stock was a pyramid scheme and that the government could be induced to investigate the company, causing it to go to zero. Ackman's short is understood to be massive. While Herbalife plunged initially, the stock has recovered somewhat as many have questioned the plausibility. Among those who are betting against Ackman is this guy here, Dan Loeb, who bought up 9% of the company. Now, when you got a guy like Ackman who says, I'll go to Congress to make sure this company goes out of business, for another guy to say, oh, yeah, I'll buy up 9% of the company and mm-hmm. I'll see you outside. This is big.
Yeah.
So let's take a look at the chart. Let me see if I can. What's going on here?
I knew you'd have all the details, Dwayne.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for a while, but nobody seemed to be interested.
Yeah, I must have missed it. I must have missed when you were talking about it, but I've been following it for the last 2 days.
Now, in America, it's kind of been low profile, but in a lot of other countries, I think it was
yeah.
like the 70s,
European.
Like 70s, early 80s, when Herbalife was really the big thing here in the U.S.,
yeah.
the whole marketing thing, you know, a way of making money, earning extra income, being healthy, has spread from country to country. And part of the deal that Ackman says is that they're running out of countries to run to. That's how mm-hmm. he's coming up with the pyramid scheme business. All right, so here's Ackman announcing his huge short position. We go from $45 down to $25, and then it starts to recover on its own, and then it was just yesterday, I'm pretty sure, that Loeb announced, you know, he had taken this long position and that he believes in the company. So this is going to be very interesting. Do you know someone who is actually an Herbalife distributor, Robin?
No.
Okay.
I heard in the past and a long time ago, I used to hear of people, but I don't know anybody today.
How about you, David? Do you know anyone that's an Herbalife distributor?
I could probably sell you some of their healthy meal product or lean muscle for working out. No, I'm just joking.
So you are? You're a guy.
No, I don't know anybody that's an Herbalife distributor. But I think part of what they're doing, and it's going to be really interesting because how they account for their money, and when the government says something, it's a broad brush statement like, well, if you make more money selling the subscription, so to speak, than you do in products, that's how we measure it. But the accounting for that could be very, very tricky.
Yep. Especially internationally.
And how to prove that. I mean, the government has a really tough case on their hands since Herbalife has been around for a long, long time. Unless they've changed their business practices dramatically, they were following the rules to not be a pyramid scheme, whatever they were in the 80s and so on, for many, many years. And suddenly now they're again a pyramid scheme. I don't know. It seems to me that if you use that same thing, that same philosophy towards our government would be nothing but a pyramid scheme. So I'm not. It seems a little odd to me, but we'll see. I think the government has a tough case on their hands. I don't think this is an open and shut case because of the difficulties of how you account for the money that comes in and how you say this is you're making more than you make this way or that way, and then you could, you know, you could show other companies that make more money on the front end than they do on their product. For, you know, an insurance company as an example. You know, they take in lots and lots of money, but their product is paying out. Well, they pay out less than they take in. Can't we make the same argument that they're making more money on, you know? I mean, it's really going to be a tough case, especially because Herbalife has just as good attorneys as the government has
after
this. So
Is that what they're going after, though? Aren't they going after the fact that this guy from the hedge fund had this big announcement and then the stock had such a big move? Isn't that why the SEC is that there might be insider trading?
Well, SEC would be going after that, but the government would be going after the other charges of being a pyramid scheme.
Yeah.
No, you're not supposed to go out and... I suppose that he might have broken some rule. He may have broken some rule. I don't know.
No, he just simply there's nothing wrong with making public.
Just saying his position,
your position,
right?
In a stock. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no. Let's see what the SEC. they're opening an inquiry, as you say, into Herbalife. Published reports say the Securities and Exchange Commission has launched a probe into nutrition and weight loss company Herbalife, whose business model has come under attack by a prominent investor. The SEC conducts inquiries privately and reviews findings before determining whether to take any enforcement action, if any. Herbalife has been grappling with questions about its business model, which involves using a network of distributors to sell its products. On its website, the company describes itself as a global nutrition company that has helped people pursue healthy, active lifestyles since 1980. Last month, Pershing Square Capital Management's William Ackman said he has been shorting the stock for several months upon concluding that the company is a pyramid scheme. Herbalife vehemently denies this and suggests that Ackman was trying to illegally manipulate its stock price to make money. It said in a statement at the time that Ackman's comments were a malicious attack on Herbalife's business model based largely on outdated, distorted, and inaccurate information. Another well-known investor, David Einhorn from Greenlight Capital, also raised concerns about Herbalife's business back in May of last year. Herbalife got a boost of confidence on Wednesday from another prominent hedge fund manager, Third Point LLC's Dan Loeb, who disclosed in a filing that Third Point owns 8.9 million Herbalife shares. Trading of the stock was briefly halted yesterday morning following a 9% spike on news of Loeb's investment. Shares were choppy after trading resumed, and the stock ended up gaining $1.42, or 3.7%, to close yesterday at $39.77. They are incorporated in the Cayman Islands and has its principal operating subsidiary in Los Angeles, sells its products in more than 80 countries through 2.5 million independent distributors.
Well, I'll tell you, if it turns out that the fellow Dan who got up and made his comments about it, if he was incorrect, he actually will stand potential legal trouble from Herbalife if, in fact, he could be shown to purposely have or negligently not have properly read
right.
and understood what the law was to go out and publicly claim that a company is doing something completely illegal when he happens to have a short position in it and wants to profit
right.
from it. That could he may be the one that goes off to jail, you know, in handcuffs when it's all over. Because you're that's the thing I'm really saying that he may have done wrong, which is that it's okay, you can express your opinion in a stock, you can say what stock you're in, etc. But if you spread false innuendo, rumor,
right.
allegations about a company's legal or illegal activities, and you end up being wrong about it, and you're trying to profit from it, that
right.
probably is going to be a tough one for Dan if it turns out that the SEC says, no, there's really nothing wrong with their business model, we've investigated and we're fine, or whatever organization. SEC's not going to do that. That's the Federal Trade Commission is going to go after any, you know, claims that they're a pyramid scheme. So, you know, the whole insider trader thing, the pyramid scheme, there's a lot of gray area in all that stuff. And
mm-hmm.
you really have to, if the government has a case, I think it gets harder and harder to promote that case the longer a company is in business and producing, success and having people, all over the world using the product and so on. And I don't know if they've changed their model or not, but I would not want to be, me personally, I would not want to be in the position of being short something that somebody owns and then come out and say something that actually ends up to be untrue later while being short, trying to profit from that. I just think there would be a really fine line between saying, well, I'm just showing my short position. It's legal for me to do that. But in the same time, you're saying something that's untrue about the company and defaming it mm-hmm. and causing investors to be scared. Yeah, I don't think that's a good position to be in, Dan. And if Dan is right, and if it turns out that they really have a case, then he won't have a problem. But I think Dan will have a problem, and he'll have a very expensive one
mm-hmm.
If it turns out that there is no case against Herbalife. I think
Bill
really has a big problem.
Bill is the short guy.
Bill,
Dan,
I'm sorry, not Dan.
Dan.
Thank you.
Dan is the long guy.
Yeah, Dan won't have a problem. Bill
will
have a problem.
It looks like on this chart, you know, the short guy could have made some money and the long guy could have made some money too.
Yeah.
This thing has run
Everyone
from
should be happy.
$40 down to 25, all the way back. You know, the thing is it this came back under its own steam here because the announcement that Dan had bought 9 million shares or 8.9% of the company, that only came out yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Right
mm-hmm.
here on this day. So all of this here was the company recovering, you know, on its own accord. However,
well, maybe the company moved up because Dan bullied it up by buying so many shares.
Well, there you go. Yeah, he was, you know, sitting on the bid. I mean, just buying, and so it pushed it right back up.
Mm-hmm. There you are. It's that simple.
Yeah. Interesting.
So anytime you want to make money in the market, just get a bunch of money and just force it up.
Now,
it's that easy.
You were correct about the government. Let's see. Let me scroll back to this. Yeah, you were correct about the government changing the definition of a Ponzi scheme in 1913. The federal government did, in fact.
Not Ponzi.
I'm sorry.
Pyramid.
Pyramid.
Yeah, same thing. they had to change the definition to accommodate the Federal Reserve.
Yep.
Because that's the biggest Ponzi scheme in the world. Pyramid, Ponzi, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The Federal Reserve. It's all right. It's a problem.
Well, we'll see how that works out. It's going to be interesting.
That's
a very interesting one. Herbalife has been, you know, over the years has had a lot of legal challenges, and this won't be the first time they've been in front of this one.
I have to tell you that when I first started trading stock, this is the kind of move that used to happen in every single stock we used to trade.
Mm-hmm.
$5 up, $10 down. I mean, it was insane. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's how markets would always be and how they were. And when I first got introduced to the markets, I never knew it was so short-lived, a short-lived era. But we used to have things $15 up, $9 down mm-hmm. in a day. I mean, it was amazing when day trading first started.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is why we say that the markets are as big as life. They really show, they have seasons, they have ups and downs, but they have very quiet periods. They express themselves. Remember, they only have three ways of expressing themselves, but they're going to express all of life through those three ways. It's as if you only had hands, feet, and eyes, and yet you're going to somehow express all of what's in you through those three things. Well, the market only has up, down, and sideways to make that expression. And so it doesn't speak in a language, it doesn't talk, it doesn't walk, it doesn't do all kinds of things, but all of life gets expressed through those three things. So one way or the other, the same way that a weed cracks through the sidewalk, all of the forces of life, all of the wide-ranging characteristics of life, strangely enough, get compressed and forced out of those three movements in the market. And if it was only two that the market could do, it would express itself that way. But, you know, as we know, there's three dimensions, so the market...
Now, this company was in trouble back in the 80s.
Yes.
I remember the CEO being on TV, and it had to do with... But it wasn't because of it being a pyramid scheme. I think it had something to do with whether there was any real nutritional value or something. Wasn't that?
Mm-hmm. I think that was the regulations of
then?
You know, having all these supplemental things not being regulated by the FDA.
Yeah, and that's why I switched over to Twinkies at that time, by the way.
Yeah, the Twinkies.
Because I was getting a further
better
nutritional.
They're going for like $1 million now.
Yeah, I was getting a lot better nutritional value at that point.
They do have the BBB stamp of approval.
Well, there you are. All right. Well, if you'd like, Dwayne, let's move over to the markets. We'll watch how this company issue goes on. And in some ways, I'm glad that there isn't an immediate jump to a final judgment and the government just jumping down on them. But I think the government knows if they're going to take the case on, they better have a real one because it's going to be difficult to bully this company around. They have a lot of money and a lot of very, very bright attorneys that know the law very well.
Well, when these public allegations are made by Ackman, the SEC would be derelict in their duty if they didn't, you know,
absolutely
take a look at it. But it, as it said in that little news blurb, that's all it is right now is they're taking a look at his accusations to see if it warrants a full-blown investigation. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, if you want to get up and say what your position is, that's fine. But if you get up and say what your position is, and by saying what you say, it defames somebody, and you happen to be making money because of that defaming, you're in trouble. You are in trouble. That you are going to be sued.
Yeah, slander, libel, the whole nine yards.
Oh, yeah. It's not going to be pretty. So ask your doctor or pharmacist. Mm. You'll see.
Well, the S&P 500 E-mini futures put in a new five-year high today. We had one back on Friday up here at 1463, and now today we took that out. We went up 2 points higher to 65 and immediately came off of that. And on the daily chart, this is what it looks like. We spiked above this right here. This has been the high going all the way back to September. And what are your comments, David? We're going higher, going lower. We're going to express ourselves.
Well, as we talked about the S&P yesterday, that the market was at a critical juncture and that it was either going to break out above 63, we felt, or it was going, if they couldn't, and we said basically barring any breakout above 63 tomorrow, they would head down to lower prices to this target that we had mentioned. I don't have the number right in front of me. But they did break out because the market was at a point where this was at a critical juncture for this move, and they ended up moving on the upside and did break out above 63 today. And completed or came very close on Globex to completing. We had 66 on the upside for them. If they did break out, they got up to 65 today. So they're reversing off of that attempt right now. And in doing so, I think it's very important how today closes. I think closing below 63 will definitely be the weaker position, and I think it's likely that they will. But let's let them show us. I don't think that would be something that I would necessarily trade, but it is important because the move up that we just completed by getting to above 63 completes an important cycle that we were basically talking about yesterday. They moved it to the upside rather than coming down. They did break out above 63, and so that leaves the market at a critical juncture now, having completed all of the price movement that would be necessary, and all of that would bring the price up to, again, 63, and then above that, the 66 level. So we're reversing off that. I mean, for today, intraday, I like the idea of any retest later of 63. I wouldn't mind watching that and potentially trading that. So that would be something. They've just attempted that just a little bit ago here. We got up to 62.50. So we'll see if there's something that comes while we're talking about it. Longer term, our overall outlook remains longer term bullish, what we've talked about so many times on the program, and we're looking for higher prices in spite of the usual declines and whatnot, that the trend remains intact until we get up into the 1500s longer term. Now, that isn't something that you might be able to just buy the market and trade, but that's kind of what we've been doing with regard to selling options, because that's something that we do. As long as we're bullish on the market or bearish, but in this case, is if we're bullish, we're always looking for places that we can sell premium, sell options, which is basically like taking a long position. So what you're doing is you're saying, I believe the market's going to stay above this particular level, and I believe it's going to go sideways to up from here. You don't have to make a really precise prediction to be right with options. You do have to be right, whatever prediction you're making, though. See, that's the interesting thing. You can diffuse the prediction that you're making. You don't have to have a very precise prediction. We might, you know, in a roadmap that we put out, we have a very precise thing. The market's going to touch this level, it's going to reverse, and it's going to go up to this level. That's a very precise prediction. But you can also have a very diffused prediction, which would be like saying, with an option, well, the market's just going to stay above this level, and it's going to do a bunch of things, but it's going to roughly stay above that for probably about 4 or 5 weeks. It's going to do that. That's a very diffused kind of prediction. In spite of the fact that it's diffused and it does seem like it's an easier call, you have to be right, even about your diffused prediction, in order to make money. So whether your prediction is a very finely tuned and honed, precise, number-to-number move, like a roadmap, or whether it is a trade that's based upon a general outlook, you have to be right on either one of those. So the right and the wrong are still part of the game. There is no instrument you can buy or sell that removes the need to be right from the equation. There are things you can do once the initial position is right that then you can put another position on in options and layer it and get what's called a free trade, but there's really nothing free about it because you had to be right and pay for it by being right in the first place. So don't think that there's a special instrument that allows you, or a special option spread or setup, which at one point, to be honest, I believe there might be a very complicated, very exotic kind of option setup that essentially made sure I'd make money no matter which way the market moved. But the bottom line is that no matter what the forecast is, you have to be right about it. No matter how finely pointed it is, or no matter how diffused the prediction is, you have to be just as right about a diffused prediction to make money as you do about a very fine prediction. So it took me many years, to be honest, to get that What I just said to you was several years to get that into my head, because I was under the belief that there was some combination of special options and maybe some other things, and, you know, the word derivatives and so on, that you could layer on one on top of another and spread this against that and calendar this against that to finally end up in a position that magically made money without you having to be right. But no matter what it is that you do with these options, in the end, you are making a prediction, and you have to be right about that prediction, no matter how it lays out, no matter how wide, diffused, or fine-pointed it is. Ultimately, every trade, you have to be right in order to make money. So just keep that in mind, because the world, if you are going to study options, the world of options can get very complex with basically hedging one position against another. But really, all these various spreads and strategies and various time calendar types of strategies, they're all basically bets against bets that you're placing, so that you can be in a position to hopefully make money, but you'll only make that money if you're right about conditions. Another one would be, as an example, selling a call, which is a bet that the market's going to go down, and selling a put, which is the bet that the market's going to go sideways to up. And you would say, well, if I sell a call and a put, I'll make money no matter what the market does. That's not true. If you sell a call and a put, you'll make money if the market stays between those two calls, you know, between the call and the put. And by expiration, all kinds of things can happen in the middle on the way to expiration. And so there's all kinds of other complexities that take place. But in the end, you are making a prediction. There are no non-predictive money-making strategies. That's what I'm saying. So to save you perhaps a year or more of trying to struggle with the option books, just write that down somewhere. There are no non-predictive money-making strategies in the market with any instrument of any kind. You have to make a prediction in order, and you have to be right about it if you're going to be trading in the markets. You can buy a treasury bill, and they'll guarantee you a certain amount of money, but that's not the same thing as a trade. The treasury bond market is guaranteeing you that money. So you don't have to make a prediction, except the prediction you're making, in a sense, is that the U.S. government is going to be solvent in order to pay you your money back. And I'm not sure I would want to place that bet in about 4 years from now. So I'm just saying. But putting that aside, that is still a bet, isn't it? But that's considered zero risk in the financial world. A U.S. Treasury bond is considered zero risk, that the government is not going to default. You will get your interest and your principal back. And that's why people invest, and that's why our credit rating is important across the United States, across the world. Because in order to get the investment from other countries that we obviously rely heavily upon, that investment means we borrow money from them. Our credit rating has to be good enough for us to be able to say two things to them. We'll pay you back, and they believe us, and we'll pay you a lower amount of interest because we have a high credit rating. Guess what? If our credit rating is lowered, that means they have less certainty that they're going to be paid back, A, and B, they're going to want more interest because they're taking a bigger risk. So one of the really big things about why the credit rating of the United States of America is so important is because America is in a bad habit of borrowing from people who want to overtake what we're doing here and become bigger than us and so on. And those people will be able to borrow money or would lend us money and get bigger interest rate returns and so on. And this, all of this is without any interest rates changing. Right now, interest rates are very low. So when the interest rate starts to go up and our credit rating goes down, I don't know, there's going to be hell to pay. That's what it's going to look like. And we will be hooked like crack cocaine on borrowing money, and now it's going to be four times more expensive probably to borrow that money than it is now. So if you think things are bad now, just wait till after our credit rating gets dinged, we go down, and we're in the, you know, continuing bad habit of using other people's money. Why on earth, and then I'll get on to the markets, should we need to borrow money from anybody?
Right.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
We've got 400 million people, 310 million people in the United States. Why do we have to borrow money from other people to keep our shop running? Well, because of many reasons that you don't want me to get all started on. But it's getting worse, and that's the problem. So this is one of the big reasons why when you hear about our credit rating and you say, well, so big deal, so our credit rating gets downgraded, it really is a huge deal. What it really means is we're going to pay trillions more out in interest to people that were hooked on borrowing money from. Did you want to say something,
Well, I'm in such violent agreement with you. Do you have within your reflective wave or within your system that has an idea of when the top is? If nothing happens and they don't do anything and they really screw up and we, you know, we go through this again and nothing's happened.
Do you go through this meaning?
Well, you know, all the government attempting to, you know, we're in this temporary. My feeling is that we're in this temporary hold from the fiscal cliff because they did nothing.
They did nothing.
And so eventually, this is going to crack and break. Is there a timeline for that?
There is, and I'll tell you that rather than put it into time frame periods, let me put it into another way. One of the reasons we've talked so many times about the 15-15 level and so on is because if that gets touched, that's when I want you to start thinking about getting ready for the big turn. Let me just put it to you that way.
Okay.
If you see the S&P, and we're at 1461.25.
Yep.
Okay, we're not very far. We were talking 15-15 is a number that we think is important. When we get up into that area, then on the long, you know, the big wave up that we've had all coming all the way back from the bottom that was made in January of 09, that's when I want you to start worrying. No, I don't want you to start worrying. I want you to start getting interested in a longer-term short for a multi-year decline.
Yeah.
And we're only, you know, 50 points, 60 points away from completing all of that on the upside. So maybe that's an easier way to think of it in terms of that price level being reached. So I hope that's...
And I'm just curious what Dwayne and you think of the Treasury Secretary, Jack Lew.
Not much.
Yeah.
Thanks for asking.
Just curious.
I don't know if Dwayne has anything on it, but...
I'm curious about your answer now, David. If you'd have said something, I would have just said, oh, okay, but...
You're curious about my answer about Jack?
Yeah, about your lack of interest, I suppose.
My lack of interest in him, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, just the way you answered her question.
No, I don't particularly think anybody in the administration has been selected for their capability of utilizing common sense in managing the economy, managing the section that they're in charge of. I'm not sure I can name anybody that is really competent. In fact, I can name a number of people, including Jack, that are, I think, clearly incompetent in managing it. And that includes, to be quite honest with you, the fellow that is spending $60 billion a month to prop up the Treasury bond market, which all of this is, you know, it's just, this is just smoke and mirrors. This is smoke and mirrors finance. So, I mean, you know, you can say, are you a purist? Are you a free market guy? Yeah, I'm a free market guy. And I think there needs to be regulation as well. But to be sitting there propping up markets with taxpayer money at the tune of $60 billion a month is just so completely off the scale, I don't even have a comment about it.
It all goes back to the train to Jekyll Island and the creation of the Federal Reserve.
It does. But we can go back all that way, and I agree with you. But rather than, you know, that's the very foundations of all this. But we could do a lot better job. The government could do a lot better job hiring people, getting people who know what they're doing, rather than what we've got there now. I mean, whether or not we have a Federal Reserve, we could have better people in the government now, more qualified people that know what they're doing and aren't bent on following the strategy that ultimately results in pigs running in the street and people screaming and shooting bullets at each other like in Greece, because that's where we're headed here in America. You know, I think we can do better than that. I know what you're saying, and I want you to make your point, but I don't. Right now, I think we could do much better, in spite of the fact that the Federal Reserve exists and, you know, is a corporation and all those things. We could do a lot of.
You know, is it me, or I just don't feel anybody cares about it? I really.
That's how
don't.
I feel too.
I don't.
Everyone
feel
is complacent.
They care about it.
Right.
And that, oh, okay, so we're just going through. Let's just print some more money. Okay, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't feel like anybody thinks that this is a bad thing.
Right.
Except for the financial people, which, of course, are the bad people in the whole country right now.
Right.
Because everybody picks on them for making money. So it's just, it's all turned around. What? I don't understand.
I've said it for years. The emperor has no clothes.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Really
it's
turned around.
Yeah. Everyone is looking at the good guys, and you know, it's just, it's miserable. Don't get me started on this, please.
I know. Okay, let's get
trying to
the
move
markets.
On to the markets here. Dwayne, did you want to throw anything in there?
No.
I didn't want to cut you off.
No. Everyone knows my feelings on the whole Federal Reserve thing, and it's there's no new news there. This is
mm-hmm.
It just continues to grow worse. So,
yeah. It sure does. Okay, so with regard to that, let's recap the S&P then. If you see 1515 or higher get touched, start uh-huh. thinking about longer-term short positions uh-huh. and be out of the stock market unless your stock happens to be particularly, you know, breaking through levels or whatever. You know, you have to know what you're doing on some extent, but in general, the larger market, even if we go beyond the 1515, anytime they get to, up to that area, use that as a timing mechanism for saying we've had enough on the long side. And we'll talk about it at the time. Certainly, we're not that far away from it. We may be talking about it rather soon. Now, won't we? Perhaps. So, now, if today does close below this 1463 level, that's an early sign for a multi-day reversal here in the S&P, and I like the idea of beginning to take short positions for further decline. So, this is going to be critical for today. I tend to think that we're likely going to see that happen. We'll wait and see. But in other words, a close below 63. But let's watch and
so
we'll
a close below 63 for lower prices or a rally to 1515.
Well, not quite that direct. I'm not sure that I would say the rally to 1515 comes by a close above 63.
Okay.
I would say that just short term for this particular trade, a close below 63, given the conditions that we laid out yesterday, that barring a move above 63, and this is one of the reasons that I'm saying this, is that this is just a short term, multi-day thing. The bigger picture stays intact for us. We do believe the market's going to be going higher. We will see 1515, but I would not say that if we close above 63, that we just go long the market here. We're going to continue to sell puts. We're willing to sit through more. We have a strategy that we're utilizing that, again, we have to be right about. There's no free lunch in this, so don't fry yourself on trying to find the special, magical, I don't have to place a bet, but I get to win when I win strategy. But yeah, I wouldn't say to go long necessarily on the breakout here, but I will say this, that if they did close above 63, I would definitely be interested in trading on the long side if they show me what I'd like to see at that time. It depends kind of on how they play out after that. I think the simplest thing to look at now is now that we've tested 63, we broke out above it, we've reached some minor targets above that. If they were to close below that today, it would be an important piece of information. And I think it would be wise to wait for that close rather than act upon guessing here, because there'll be a couple of good days that we can trade on the downside, I believe. Did you want to add something to that, Dwayne?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay, so let's see. Anything else on the S&P? Robin, anything for the S&P? You want to?
No, not today.
Okay. Let's see. What else can we talk about? Let's move over to gold. We do have quite a bit of volatility in the markets today. I know there was some news, and Dwayne, you might have talked about this earlier, but gold had quite a move up. As you know, we had talked about the reflected wave bottom that was due on the 3rd for January 3rd in gold in a number of markets, wide range of markets. The January 3rd date was important. plus or minus a day. Most of it was January 3rd or 4th. The gold did bottom and we're up substantially from that low, 1626, now up to 1678. We had named a target on the program up at 1676 or so. They've reached that in 4 days here. It's a pretty decent move up. And I have to say that I've mentioned this before. For those of you who may have not been in gold or may have missed your opportunity like we did for quite a period of time, 8 years, you know, before we got in from the bottom, way back in the early 2000s, we waited till 2009. We didn't consciously wait. We attempted to get in many times and could not. But I think that January is going to mark a very important bottom in gold. The kind of bottom that is going to give the market an opportunity to show whether or not the big move up, the really big move up, is either over or is ready. You know, it's a make or break kind of thing. So you might want to keep an eye on the January bottom here that they're putting in. So we'll talk about that as we continue, but I believe that's very important. This is one of the reasons, by the way, that we talked about the first quarter of this year. We forecast last year the first quarter of this year is going to have a lot of volatility in a number of markets, and gold is one of them, crude, and a couple of others, because there's a lot of things coming together in 2013 on that type of viewpoint, technically speaking. So, all right, so we'll move on here from gold. If you have any questions while I'm talking here, if you have a question, Dwayne, we'll pass it on.
Josh had a question about the S&P. I just now saw it.
Okay.
He says, yesterday David said if the market was unable to get to 47, he'd be a buyer, but he just said that if we can't close above 63, he's a seller. So he's confused. He would like
okay.
to.
Let me try to clarify. Yesterday, when we were on the program, we talked about the if the market was barring a breakout today, because we knew that today was the 10th was important for a potential of a breakout, but barring a breakout on the upside above 63. We would want to short the market down to lower prices, like for a retest of the 1447 level and so on. The reason we threw in barring a breakout is because we knew there was a real possibility for the market on the 10th to break out. That's what happened. So as opposed to shorting the market, and if you take a look at the Globex overnight, and we were watching the Globex overnight because we wanted to take advantage of the possibility for that decline. Now, yesterday, the market did not, you know, went up to 59.50, closed at 55.75. So we were at a critical juncture, and we mentioned that on the radio program, that it was critical into the 10th. Well, we watched the Globex as long as we could stay up, and there just was no indication at all for a breakdown. There was nothing there to sell. So really, it just didn't afford an opportunity it didn't spike, it didn't do anything unusual, it didn't try to fake out. I mean, it was very well contained throughout the whole evening. So we ended up not doing anything with it because our bias was we would have rather shorted it. And, you know, sometimes you hear people say don't have a bias, but we did. And so as it turns out, the potential for the breakout on the 10th, which we talked about, did occur, and they tested the 66 level or came right within a point of it. So I don't know. I hope that clarifies it.
Does that answer your question, Josh? Does that clarify it for you?
Yeah, we wanted to short it down to the 47 if they did not break out today. We looked on the Globex for a spot to do that, and we couldn't find it because they just wouldn't break, and it was obviously in a trend. Sometimes when you get a bias, it makes it difficult for you to trade the other way, and it's especially ironic that it'll often be the easiest and most obvious, clearest signal that the market's trending or showing you that it's going to go the other way, but you've already convinced yourself that, you know, you just are not able to get yourself to commit in that other direction. And for me personally, it was late at night, and I just was not up for taking on a position that was counter to that. So, you know, these are some of the things that traders deal with, is their own feelings, their own bias, and so on. And I did get myself biased more. We knew both sides of the trade, but we were not able to, in spite of, this is the irony, in spite of the fact that had we been bullishly biased, we would have said, boy, look at that beautiful trend. We'll buy this like nothing else. But because we had been biased the other way, therefore, it made it much more difficult to participate in a known event, the fact that there was a real possibility for a breakout on the 10th. Here we are. It broke out on the 10th, but we didn't take advantage of it. These are the things that traders deal with, and this is why the psychology of trading, it's not even the psychology of trading. It's your psychology of trading. At some point, you're going to have to come in contact with your own psychology, because many people, like myself and probably many listening to this program, have been, remember the movie The Running Man? I don't know. Who was in that? Who was The Running Man? It was...
I don't remember.
I don't know. Who was that? It was a...
Was it the guy who was married to Farrah Fawcett?
No, that's the $6 million man.
No.
Oh.
Yeah.
I can't think
of that. But that wasn't The Running... I don't think that was The Running Man, though.
Oh, that wasn't The Running Man.
Going back to that trade from last night, we were thinking the same thing, David. We had put out a tweet to consider being short below 1454 again. During the radio program yesterday, we had said that 54, we'd been selling it all week, but that the dynamic had changed, and so now we like the idea of buying 54. And then as the market began to climb, we said, now if it goes back below 54 again, we want to be short. And so here is the tweet right here. Consider being short below 54 again. But then a couple hours later, the short side did not trigger. So now we're going to have to consider being long above 1460 and a quarter. Because that's what the market was doing, and that's the very thing you were talking about. As far as that being biased kind of thing, we like the idea of getting short below 54, but you can't get short below 54 if the market doesn't go below 54.
Not only that, you can't get long if you're biased thinking that you want to be short below 54. Yeah. And this happens to everybody. This is a good example of how you – I don't know if this is a good example, but any example – can show you that you can be correct about a move sometimes and be wrong. You can, you can be correct about a move and not make money from that move. I mean, that's happened to me 102 times now. No, you can be correct about a move and not make money from it. You can also be uncertain about a move, but have targets on either side and bias yourself, which is what happened here. And so last night, you know, whatever time it was when I was realizing this thing's trending really well, I just lit up some illegal substances and took a drag off of it and just fell asleep. So that's how I managed, you know, I managed myself. I thought I handled it beautifully. I really did. You guys know I'm just joking. I mean, I hardly eat Twinkies.
No, he's so good. He's a sushi king. That's all he eats. He loves sushi.
No, I don't eat just sushi. I just eat sushi for lunch.
Every day.
I eat, and it's not just sushi. I also eat, I just want to say for the record, I have cooked food. If you've been there with me, you've seen I eat cooked salmon while I'm there.
Yes,
remember?
You do. You eat cooked salmon. Yes, that's
so
true.
So there's the bento box. Very good. And a very good deal as well.
And excellent.
Okay. It is very good. Okay, so we covered the S&P, and I hope I answered the question. We'll move on. If you have any further questions, you can ask while we're going through here.
Josh,
we'll blast through some of these markets.
Did that answer your question? Okay, I guess it did.
Jim
just sent me a message. He says that Interactive Brokers, they're pretty big, just announced that they were going to hike both initial and maintenance margins on all low cap stocks under $250 million beginning January the 11th. To 100%.
Yeah. Why do you think that might be?
Volatility in the market.
Right. But that's exactly what I'm saying. That's
but you
couldn't
tell that from looking at the VIX, because the VIX is sending signals of incredible complacency right now.
Right. But the VIX isn't predictive. It's actually reflective.
Yeah.
So for what we're saying is that, and, you know, this is just our outlook. It's not... But we're saying that we believe there's something big coming in the first quarter of this year that's very volatile. It's going to be explosive. And we're getting the news that brokerages somehow are getting that sensing as well, because to raise the margin on stocks to 100% is a big deal, right? I mean, that's one of the big things about stocks is that you do have, you don't have as much leverage as you do in futures, but you do have leverage.
Right.
You have 50% usually. Well, now you don't after January 11th.
And that's only on stocks with a market cap of less than $250 million.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're sensing something, and I'm not going to be surprised. I won't be surprised if we end up seeing margins go up on a number of different markets, crude oil being one of them. Okay, so we'll move on from the gold here. What I was going to say also is you might want to watch gold because, as you know, we had a important level at 1680. If we close the month of January, I realize that's a ways away yet, but keep this in mind. If we close above 1680, then that's going to further confirm our bullish bias, our bullish forecast, I should actually say, not so much the bias, but our bullish forecast for gold. And for those of you who want to get our roadmap or anything that's coming out on gold, you can sign up. We give out these roadmaps on our Messenger Pro product, and you can get them sent directly to you and, you know, utilize them. These are for longer-term types of setups and trades. Facebook today reached the
Before we leave gold, there was a question. Do you think that the bottom is in on gold, the January bottom that you're talking about? Do you think it's in?
I don't want to say whether I think it's in yet. I think if you were asking me at a bar, I probably would say yes. But I'm on live radio with potentially thousands of people listening, and I don't want people to take an unnecessary risk in the market.
Okay.
I think it would be wiser to wait for the month to close and then get our roadmap, to be honest with you, because these roadmaps are very, very, if I may say so, deeply thought out. We're not fooling around with them. We take a lot of time and trouble to put them together. It hurts my head sometimes, to be honest with you. It really does, to think them through, because you have to think in three dimensions. It's not easy. You know, here's two things moving, and you've got, and then you got a third thing moving, and you got to put all together and think it through.
Yeah.
And, you know, so bottom line is I think it would be wise for most people, but we may, here's even a better answer, I hope. We will probably have a roadmap for gold prior to the ending of this month. So if we put it out, that means at that point, obviously, we really believe the deal's in. And for those of you who don't want to do anything, and you don't have to, you can just simply know that the market is going to be in a bullish position at the end of the month if we close above 1680, and we will be seeing substantially higher prices. So keep that in mind. I think this is a very important juncture. Very important juncture that the market's at, and this is one of the many reasons we think high volatility is going to be in the first part of this year, first quarter, second quarter of this year. We're already seeing some of it now. Take a look at the last week on the S&P. It isn't a joke. Look at Facebook today as well. We're up substantially. We did have some number we gave out yesterday at 31-something. I don't remember what it was. It might have been 31-10 or something, and I talked about that yesterday. They've reached that and exceeded it. So this is a market that's on the boil, but I don't have anything to add to it. I'm going to kind of move through these quickly because I know we've taken quite a bit of time here. The Treasury bond market, nothing new to add to that. This is the week that we forecast a couple weeks back for a bottom on the week of January 7th. And for those of you who have a reflected wave, you know also about the bottom forecast on January 4th on the daily chart. So here you have a daily bottom due on January 4th and a weekly bottom due on the week of January 7th. So what does that mean? That means that you could have easily forecast that the bottom was going to come in 1 week early on the daily bottom, which is exactly what happened. So anybody who was participating in that had a nice move up, several multi-day move up, and then now we're getting reaction here. But we do believe that the bond market is bottoming for a larger advance here, in spite of what we're seeing in the S&P and so on. The euro, the same story. We talked about the euro having a bottom that you could buy on January 4th based on the same reflected wave setup. The euro was up substantially off of that bottom. We had a target, an initial target that we'd given out of 131.90. The low on the 4th was 130.05. The market certainly achieved the 130 190 and is now trading at 132.67. This is a really big move.
Yeah, Draghi
that the Euro had
made an announcement
off of the January 4th bottom. So this is just another good example of, you know, placing a trade, timing the trade, and then living with the trade. And not only do you have to live with the idea that you're in the market, but you also have to be able to live with gains. And I'm telling you, if you're new to trading, you may think that the only side you have to worry about is the downside and that holding on to winning positions is a breeze. You'll learn. You'll see. You'll find out what I learned.
Hello.
Which is,
hello.
Yeah, holding on to winning positions is harder than holding on to losing positions is everyone's passion. That's what everyone loves to do.
I can't even begin to tell you how true a statement that is. So many people get into a trade, get their great setup, have it go, and they exit too soon.
Mm-hmm.
They just freak out, and they're so afraid they have to hold on to every little cent instead of letting the trade work. Now, I'll put money on it. That people that do that are looking at their P&L. And if you are looking at your P&L as you're trading, you are not trading. You have got to have your setup, your criteria. You have to look at your charts and make your determinations from that. And it's the quality of your trade, not the money. If you work on the quality of the trade, the money will just naturally be there.
Oh, that was very nicely said.
Do you like that?
Mm-hmm. That's very nice. Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself. It's the quality of the trade. If you work on that, the money side takes care of itself.
Exactly.
And the money side, whether however many points it is, whatever it is, let that part take care of itself. You just work on the trade. Trade to reasonable targets and hold on. You know, you can't stand and scream all day long, right? Sometimes you have to talk. Sometimes you have to take a breath. Markets are the same way.
Yeah.
Let them have a little room to trade to the important levels. And, you know, oh ye of little faith, you know, you've seen it work 50 times, but then when you get in the market, the biggest thing that happens in your mind is this isn't going to work, and you get scared. And you literally Twilight Zone freak yourself out of the trade.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing bigger than what you do to yourself is having Rod Sterling standing right next to you. That's the next step for you and for me. Not so much me anymore, though, because I've been around the block with this baby a couple times. So I know how to hold on to a position.
There was an ECB announcement this morning, and Draghi, this whole thing hinged on this one statement right here. Based on our regular economic and monetary analysis, we've decided to keep the key ECB interest rates unchanged. And when he said that, the market came unchained and huge rally.
They're going to put you all back in chains.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what is that market you're looking at?
That's the Euro.
The Euro, okay.
Yeah, the ECB. Yeah. I had their – it's, I guess, their equivalent of when we have like a Fed announcement. They had their thing this morning, and Draghi said that they're not going to raise interest rates. They're going to keep them low. And so the Euro rallied, and the dollar, I'm going to guess – I haven't looked at it. Did it take a dive?
The euro? No, the euro is up. Did you say the euro, Dwayne? I'm sorry.
No, I said, did the dollar take a dive?
Oh, the dollar. Yeah, I think the dollar did.
As the
certainly.
Euro rose, here's the dollar doing the exact opposite.
Yeah, the euro and the dollar, very close connection there, much closer for me than, say, bonds in the S&P, which is a very common theme that you hear amongst traders. We'll move on real quick to crude. I can reveal now that we had a roadmap, and we still do have a roadmap, and I think most people probably know, in crude for a run from at or above 84.65 up to 94.70 to 95. Yesterday, I was perhaps lamenting a little bit on the radio that maybe we should have done this in the February contract because that was the more liquid one, but oh ye of little faith. No, that would be me in that case. Today they rallied up and they did complete the first leg of the roadmap, which to us is very important. This was meaning that the market should run up from 84.65 up to 94.70 to 95 or higher in January. So this was made in early December for a run up into January. And so we're now about to enter the second phase of this roadmap. If you'd like to see the roadmap, you can go to pagetrader.com, sign up and take a look at it, because this is a very important juncture that we're approaching here. And we're going to wait just for those of you. I know what the question is. You know, can I go short now? Can I? Is this where I go short or long, or what do I do here? We will deal with that next week, because we do have the patience required to trade these markets. And sometimes patience will make you miss the trade. Sometimes patience will get you in a really good trade. But in the end, patience does seem to work in your favor. Whereas, you know, jumping and spinning and flipping all over yourself often ends up not, even if it gets you in a good trade, that same jumping and flipping gets you out of the trade. You know, just relax. Just relax. Listen to the sound of my voice. Just relax. It's just like that. Just relax for just a moment. Take a breath and just wait for the good stuff to come along. The good stuff will come along. You know, you don't say hi to everybody in the street. You let a whole bunch of people walk by, and then once in a while you say hi to somebody. That's how you should trade. Go ahead.
I was going to ask you when your next workshop was. Do you have
We actually have a webinar. We have two things. We have a webinar today, and I'd like to invite everybody, if you'd like to come. We're going to cover some of the stuff here and a few other things that we're not talking about here, but we're going to go over our Messenger Pro and some of the things that we're doing in it today, and you're welcome to come to it by going to pagetrader.com, clicking on the link that's under the Trader's blog, and that'll give you, you know, go to Trader's blog, it'll give you a link, and then you can just visit us today. It's at 1:30, or 15 minutes after the S&P closes Pacific time. But whatever time zone you're in, it doesn't matter, just 15 minutes after the S&P closes, you can show up there and we'll talk about the markets today. The other thing is, and thank you for asking, Robin, is our upcoming March 16th and 17th Reflected Wave seminar, where we actually teach the methodology called Reflected Wave, so that people can learn for yourself the use of this methodology to know that January 4th or 3rd is going to be a top or a bottom in these various markets. Go back and take a look and see. Listen, going back after the fact is one thing, and it can show you that, hey, the thing worked. Trading it is a different thing, and I think everybody on the program knows that, and I think it's very fair to bring that point up repeatedly. Having said that, can you learn to trade what you now see? Can you take a look at the January 3rd and 4th tops and bottoms, and could you learn to actually trade those? And I think for most of us, the answer is yes. I think you could learn to trade that. Everyone has a certain set of conditioning they bring to the market. You may need some fine-tuning. You may need to use Robin, her help, to help dial down some tendencies that you have. I happen to be a little hyper. I happen to be a little quick-witted and quick on the draw to do, not quick-witted, I meant, now you know what I think of myself. Actually, it's quick on the draw to jump and to quickly come to a fast, you know, movement. And that has hurt my trading. That has been one of the things that I've had to get over. I've had to learn how to relax in trading and get money off my mind. And we've talked about this many times. Yeah. Money was my poison. Maybe it's not your poison, but it was mine, because I can trade real good without worrying about money now.
Yeah.
But if I start worrying about money, I ain't trading so hot no more. No more.
Yeah. And you do have, you know, if you have, you know, a very fast mind, and your mind is going, it's kind of racing, and your eyes are going all over the screen, you have to really work on focus and patience. Those are the two things that I always see with A-type personalities, or people that are just zipping. You know, their mind is going faster even than the words can come out of their mouth, because their mind is going, which is, you know, on one hand is an asset, and on another hand, like David said, you have to really get it under control and really slow down and focus and take a deep breath and just really, really, really concentrate, because your mind is racing. So you have a good side and a bad side. You want to throw out the bad stuff and keep the good stuff.
Yeah, I used to work at a doctor's office, but I quit because I didn't have the patience. Huh. See, my mind does work very bad. All right. No, that's very true. And that has been a problem for me for many, many years. And so what solved it for me, and you're just going to have to find it in yourself, because I've tried to say it a million times, if money wasn't the issue, you'd be trading a lot better. That's my best way of putting it. If money wasn't on your mind, you would make a much better trader than you are today. period.
Yeah, well, that's why people trade in sim mode so good. You know, they go into sim mode.
Yeah, that's a great point. Thank you.
You know, and then they go to make the transition, and they freak out. You know,
right. How come you trade so well in sim mode?
Yeah.
What's that all about? How come you're a god in sim mode?
Yeah.
But the moment you put your thing, okay, there you are. That's the final way to say it. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been struggling to how to put that into words for years, and you just did that for me. I'll buy lunch.
Oh, okay.
Let's finish up here.
I have some quotes when you.
I think we're almost done. So crude oil, come check out the roadmap. I think this is very important. I think you guys will. We're certainly going to try to take advantage of it. I can assure you of that.
What do you got from
this? Will be
gas?
Our. I'm sorry, Dwayne.
Natural gas.
Let's move past this real quick. If you don't, let me just flip through these because they're in a certain order for me. So if you don't mind, let me see if there's anything else. I'll switch over to that page.
Now, which net gas do you look at specifically? What net gas do you look at?
Well, we might want to have Bert on here because the answer to that question might relate to your platform and the kind of nomenclature they use for it.
What's the extension?
Yeah.
What is it? You know,
I'll give it to you in just a moment here.
I typed it into you, Robin. It's GNG. Now that's on the
But on TradeStation, that's not what it is, and so I have to look it up by the name.
Yeah, I don't know what your symbol is there.
Yeah.
All right, let's
go into just search natural gas.
I did, but there's a bazillion of them.
Let me also get through cocoa real quick because I had mentioned something about cocoa the other day on the program, and it's already closed today, but I just want to make note of this, that we had talked about this was last week, and it was a sort of a little minor forecast that cocoa had basically bottomed, and we were looking for cocoa to move up from roughly $2.22 up to $2.94 into this week, the week of January 7th. So cocoa has had a decent move up this week. It really reversed strongly today, and we are looking for them to complete the $22.94 that we'd order, the $2 and let me get the right things, $2.29 up here. So they're almost there. Today's high, or this week's high so far, has been $2.27.6. So they're moving up. This is a great example, by the way, of a very natural principle in the market, the fact of the cocoa bottoming a few days ago and doing this and running to this number and so on. So, I don't know if there's enough room in it left for people to seriously trade it here. For those of you, nobody's asked any questions about it, so I'm assuming maybe most people aren't in it. But I know we do have a couple of traders that we know that are in this, so we're hoping that they trade it to the target. It's not close enough yet to consider taking it off yet. And then we'll move through that.
Robin, you can use just @NG on TradeStation.
Oh, okay.
For the continuous contract.
@NG.
And if you want the exact symbol, it's NGG13. Okay, which one you want to go to now, Dave?
I don't have much on natural gas. Did you, Robin or Dwayne, did you want to comment on it at all?
There's just a question from a listener that asking if you had anything.
Well, let's see. You know, the last thing that happened on natural gas that was important was the January 3rd bottom, and it came in one day early on January 2nd. This is that same reflected wave indication, and they had a very nice multi-day move up to up about $2, whatever it works out to, a nice maybe $2,000 per contract, something like that. And then they sold off and retested very quickly that low that they made on January 2nd. I don't have anything immediately for this except to say what we've said a number of times recently, which is that we are expecting lower prices. This is a little bit longer term, but not too long term, because it leads us into February. Into February, we're expecting lower prices into February. Normally would be going down to $2.98. So in spite of the fact that we had, the daily bottom in the advance, we had said we expect further decline after that advance is over for a bottom to be made in February. That's our whole big forecast, was that they would bottom in February. So think of it this way. There's going to be a bottom in February in natural gas. A. B, it's going to touch $2.98 or lower. C, then we want to go long. See ya. How's that?
Yeah, something I just like heard that. I just heard some stuff overnight. Sometimes I wake up early in the morning and catch the European stuff, and they said that there was going to be some kind of shortage with the cold temperatures plus the shortage that was going to cause this to go up. So
I do the same thing. I wake up sometimes at 2 in the morning, and I see a vague, foggy picture of Hugo Chavez staring me in the face saying, short crude, short crude. I think, oh, my God, what is this? You know. Anyway, it's something I'm struggling with.
I got it up on the thing now. I've got it on the – the at NG. That's good. Yeah. Thank you.
So we're looking for lower prices into February. So when the bottom came in on January 3rd, we had said the market will go up for several days, but we expect it to come back down and continue to lower prices into February. So it's a little bit longer term, obviously, and I think the wise thing to do is to either sell breakouts or to sell important rallies on the way down to lower prices into February. So that's our outlook on that. And then, Robin, I'm sorry to inform you that soda is no longer going up as fast as it was before.
I was just going to say that I don't think it's in a bad place right now.
It's not in a bad place. They've done nothing wrong with it.
No, I think it's hit two little support things there. And I'm looking at a – let me see what month here. I think it's fine. Do you have the – there you go.
Right there.
That's a daily – daily.
Daily. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're kind of going just a little bit sideways, but we're not dropping. You know, we had that one little kick up, and then I think we had a sell-off a little bit, some taken profits, and then now we're going a little sideways. And everything else I like about it, and I'm looking to go into that Super Bowl is what I'm looking on this guy.
Yeah.
You know, the Super Bowl push with Dwayne mentioning.
I think it would help, though, if perhaps we went on to live TV or something and showed people that if you drop Mentos into the soda product, it'll do the same thing it does in the regular soda. I mean, you get the big stream up and everything. That might help the stock as well, because I think people are wondering about that.
Would they blow up the bottle or something?
No, if you put Mentos in a Coke bottle, it will shoot up a stream 15 feet in the air.
Yeah, it's like explodes.
it's really very impressive. And I've always wondered if this product does that. I mean, that I think would help. If this product does that, that's fabulous.
Well, you got to put up – it's probably on YouTube.
Yeah, what is their product called? SodaStream? Is that what it's called?
SodaStream, yeah.
Okay. So we should find out. Maybe you could go on the internet, Dwayne, and find out.
It's just reacting to the carbonation.
Well, maybe.
The Mentos is just acting to the carbonation. I don't think it's anything other than that.
Maybe it's the
formula of the Coke.
We'll see.
What's in the Coke?
I've seen that. It's pretty Mentos wild. And Coke.
Huh?
I said if you just type in Mentos.
But do Mentos SodaStream, and let's see if that is a real possibility that it's the same effect. That would be important to my investing.
Really?
Mm-hmm. SodaStream share is being put to the Mentos test.
Right. There you go.
See, close
perfect.
Soda.
That's
soda
exactly the way to say
Mentos
it.
Mentos don't react.
They don't react.
Oh, see that?
See, Robin, don't jump to conclusions like that, honey. You got to do the investigation.
I thought it was the carbonation. So it's got to be something in the Coke formula. That's crazy.
I know. Well, listen, I think that's everything we have. I hope that's good information. For those of you who have an interest, you can come to our webinar today, 15 minutes after the S&P closes.
I'll put the link in the chat room.
Thank you very much. That says it all. A lot of information. I hope you can put it to use. Practice relaxing. Just relax. Seriously. Yep. Take it easy. Find your way.
Let me give you a couple quotes on this. Everyone makes mistakes. They're a fact of life. This is really, really big for traders, too, because if you get to the point of just – your goal is to get to the point of boredom. That's the goal. Life is not life unless you make mistakes. Joan Collins. Mistakes are part of our dues. One pays for a full life. Sophia Loren. Ever tried, ever failed, no matter. Try again, fail better. Samuel Beckett.
That's good.
And flops are a part of life's menu, and I've never been a girl to miss out on any of the courses. Rosalind Russell. Hmm. So I had a whole bunch of actresses on here today for this particular one, which I thought was kind of interesting because, you know, they sign up for a movie, do a movie, and, you know, they think it's okay, but then it is a flop, and they have to deal with it forever and ever and ever. It haunts them forever. Now, when we trade, we have the opportunity to have a shortfall and just be done with it. Just let it go, pass it by, learn from it, find something that you need to adjust in your trade, learn from it, have a new rule or a new distinction in your trading, and then go from there. So from a psychology perspective, you know, losses can be very good. You could learn that one thing, that one tiny thing in that trade that makes your trade take a quantum leap the next day.
Right.
So digging on the trade. I mean, David, you've done so much work. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, when I sit down with David, he has done so much work on his psychology to get it to the point where he just literally is so disciplined to his research and he's a digger. I mean, he is a digger that I've never seen. He's one of the top diggers I've ever seen. You have to dig at the market.
Yeah,
and
listen,
it's very impressive.
Thank you for saying that, and I want to say this. I'm not coming into the office to see how much money I can make today or tomorrow. I'm mm-hmm. coming into the office to see how well I can trade today
exactly.
or tomorrow. That's what encapsulates my approach.
Exactly.
How you doing?
Well, I hope everybody picks that up because that's the key. That is the key.
All right. Well, Dwayne and right. Robin, thanks very much for that. And Dwayne, thank you for having me on. I think we're leading into a very important Friday tomorrow, and we have all of next week to catch some of these, the beginnings of some of these moves that we've talked about. Any final thoughts from you, Dwayne, on your end?
In regards to?
Anything at all before I zip out of here?
Nope. We're hanging out right here between these two zones on the S&P. We've just pulled back to this 1460 and a quarter number from last night. So I want to see if that's going to hold a support. If we can get back below 65, then I look for, or I'm sorry, 58, then I'll look for 50, mm-hmm. 51. And as long as we stay above 59, then the potential is for us to, you know, the markets would really like to close the day at a five-year high. They got it. They did it mm-hmm. last Friday. They got mm-hmm. a chance to do it again today. So if the markets don't close at a five, being this close, if the markets are unable to close the day at a five-year high, that should tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
That should be, you know, doesn't mean it's the end of the world, but it means that we might be done going up for a day or two. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Take care.
Okay. Thanks very much, Dwayne. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, Robin.
Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, David.
Take
thank
care.
You, Michael. Have a fabulous day.
You too.
You guys too. See you soon.
I didn't notice what time it was. All I know is that I fell in love with you. And if all my dreams come true, I'll be spending time with you. Every day's a new day in love with you. With each
okay, that's going to wrap it up, guys. Here we sit, hanging out just below the five-year high in a weekly zone at 65.66, with support below us at 58.59. Could look to be long up above 67. You could look to be short down below 56. Otherwise, you're trading inside of this range right here. So let it work itself out. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. I'll see you at the bell.
remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.